Welcome to episode 13 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is Christmas Eve, December 24th, 2011. I'm Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-host, James Furlough.
Merry Christmas. It's good to be here. I'm actually live and in person down at Matthew's home office, recording studio, / bedroom.
So if you notice a sharp increase in sound quality, that's the reason. But if you notice a sharp decrease in sound quality, that's also the reason.
Yes.
All right. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. James has got a short disclosure before we get into the show.
So, as you all probably know by now, but I never get tired of showing it off, I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent Hewlett-Packard within this podcast. And so, any opinions that we give, I should always say I. And if I happen to say we, I meant to say I. If you listen to last week, you'll remember I did that a lot. And so, it was all about I. And so, just so you do seriously know, we're doing this on speakerphone, so we may sound like we're inside of a cave, and quite honestly, it feels that way at times. You also might be hearing some other noise, because the rest of the Furlough clan is in tow. But hey, that's okay. We're here to bring you some awesome entertainment and some news.
All right. This is pretty exciting, so, we thought about having a special Christmas-themed show, but we don't have any special Christmas stuff, so we'll give you the normal theme show. Follow us at Furlough Bros. You can also go to furloughbros.com, or you can check out our Google Plus page at Furlough Bros, or our Facebook page at Furlough Bros. If you want to follow just James or Matthew because you have a preference about which one's more awesome,
follow me.
You can follow me at Matthew T. Furlough,
or you can actually follow me at James Furlough.
And that's via Twitter, by the way, for those of you who don't recognize the at handle.
And if you don't, what are you doing listening to us?
Yeah, seriously.
Just saying. I mean,
we don't want
thank
audience.
You for yeah. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. We don't want to criticize you yet. Cool. So you want to start us off, James?
Let's talk tech, yeah. So I saw something this week on Monday that I thought was a very cool concept. And the name of the company is, I don't know how to pronounce it totally, but it's Wahooly? Wahooly, yeah. I think that's correct. And it's described as a hybrid between Clout and Kickstarter. I don't actually get the Clout connection, but I totally get the Kickstarter connection.
All right, you're going to have to tell me what those are.
Okay, so Clout is your it's this startup that supposedly is able to track your social reputation, your social clout, if you will.
All right.
So if you tweet something out, it takes into account how many times you're retweeted or replied to, how many times your things are liked on Facebook, that kind of stuff. You know, how many followers you have, you know, whatever. Some sort of secret algorithm, I'm sure. That tells you, like, you know, what your clout is. Cool. All right, fine. Kickstarter, on the other hand, is another startup where, let's say you have a project, you want to make a CD, but you have to do a recording in order to do it, and you don't have the funds to do it. You could say, I'm raising money to record my CD, my album. It's going to cost me, I don't know, $2,000, whatever. And you tell people, donate money. Anyone who donates at least $10 gets a CD when I go live.
Nice.
Yeah, and so it's a way to kind of crowdsource the funding of your startup to kickstart your business. It's a cool concept. So,
yeah.
So what Wahooly does is you have a business, and, well, let me take a step back here. When you're starting up a business and you're trying to get funding or just make the product better, one of the things that you need is, one of the marketing terms is traction, which is this idea of do you have customers and do they like what it is that you're doing? Okay, fair enough. And as a startup, that is extremely hard to do. Heck, on this podcast, right? That's what we deal with. Do we have traction? Do we have followers? People who are listening who enjoy the show? And until you have that, it's really hard to get feedback and convert. It's also really hard to get funding or just, you know, flat out make money without customers.
Right.
And so what these guys have done is they have figured out a way, or they have gone and recruited influential people in the tech space who have high clout. And I don't know if they actually use clout to figure that out, or if they have their own secret algorithm. I don't know. But they have, it's a pool, and it's a pretty decently sized group of people. If I remember correctly, it's like, it's either 25 or 50,000 people to choose from. And basically what you do is you come in with a company and you say, hey, I've got a product and I need testers for it to get feedback. And you pay them some amount of money, I'm sure. And you get a testing group between 5,000 and 8,000 people who are, you know, who know what they're doing on the internet, and they can give you feedback and then say, hey, yes, it's good. Improve this, do that, you know, whatever. And then hopefully if it's a good product, you now have 5,000 to 8,000 users. You now have that traction that is so important to getting the feedback and ultimately getting funding and becoming a successful company.
Nice. So how do you get on board with this?
Great question. I would imagine that you just visit their website, which is WAHOOLY. Now let me take a quick peek-see here.
Wahoo!
And let's see. You get the exclusive opportunity to get a piece of this next big thing or things. First name, last name, email.
Nice.
Well, that's probably for the startups click here. So that's if you want to be an applicant. And then If you're a startup, you give a little bit more information, like your company, your position, your website, your elevator pitch. Whoa, there's a ton of boxes. but, you know, there you go. And I bet they're probably, oh, let's see here. In exchange for, oh, yeah, that was the other interesting part, is you don't actually pay, that's right, you pay a monthly fee to have them manage all of this, but for those users, you actually give them a little bit of equity of your company. So to test your product, because that would be the next question, right? Like, how do you get these people to test out your product?
Right.
You give them equity. And so they have an incentive to help you make your product better, because ultimately when you do get funding, they get a piece of the kickback.
Nice.
So now if you're talking, you're giving up 4% of your company and you've got 4,000 testers, yeah. I mean, it's not a huge chunk, but, you know.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that's significant for a... if they
go big time and get like $100 million in funding, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I would take it.
And I'm sure if you like, it's probably fun. And if you do quite a few of them, you know, that can actually turn into a serious side, you know, side basket of money. That's very cool.
But anyways, yeah, it's pretty cool. I really like the idea. I mean, it's a weird way of buying customers, but you know, we'll see if it works. It's literally brand new, so you may never hear of it again. But hopefully you did hear of it here first. But no, I thought it was a very cool concept, very very interesting business idea, because getting traction and getting customers and that feedback is a huge hurdle for companies to get over.
Right, and that's really leveraging your social network. I mean, you know, Threadless is the t-shirt company where you can make a design and then the user base votes on it, and once you get a certain number of people who said, oh, I'd totally buy this if you printed this, they print X number of t-shirts, and then they sell them, like, sell almost all of them, because there's a user base, there's known opinions, and so this is sort of a, you know, where Threadless was designed specifically for a type of product, t-shirts.
Yeah.
Wahooly sounds like it's kind of a general, it's a general more open version of that, where we're going to get a strong user base, we're going to get people using your product. If you get support, you get feedback, and based on that, will you know, your company will take off or not. It's a cool use of the social networking aspects of the internet to sort of turn that into a financial gain for everybody.
Yeah, it was cool. We'll see if it works. Cool. I mean, obviously, what they need to do is attract winning companies.
Right.
And they need to have at least one or two every single year that exits through a big round of funding so that all those users, you know, get something in return.
Right.
Because if all that they attract are the losers who couldn't get big-time funding to begin with, you know, that's going to get old after a while, because I'm doing it for the payout. And so
right.
They got to get that, which, you know.
They probably have to figure out some sort of a way to rank you with, like, point systems on the internet, because that seems to be an odd motivator for me. What do you mean? I can get worthless internet points? Yes!
Well, and it'd be interesting to sign up for it, too, because, or we should contact the founders and get them on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to ask them, like is this something where users, like, are you just given a random company or a handful of companies? Or do I get to browse them and say, oh, I'd like to be a tester for this one?
Yeah, see, that would make a difference.
Fascinating. And then if you give me, like, credits or something to where I can sign up for X number of companies
right.
up until I have my credits, and as more signers sign up, those credits become more, you know, it requires more credits to sign up for the company. So it's to your advantage to get in, like, really ground floor. And maybe those credits are what count towards shares.
Yeah.
So anyways, which that gets into more of, what is that called? It's another crowdsource type of forecasting measure where people vote and they have credits and stuff like that. But anyways, but there's lots of ways that they could do it, and I think it could be pretty interesting. But they got to have a couple winners, otherwise that's going to get old really fast.
It's true. That's powerful, though. That's a powerful way to move forward. A lot of successful episodes.
I might sign up, actually.
I know. I'm thinking about it, too. It sounds kind of fun.
I don't know if I have enough clout, but...
Shoot. Everybody start listening to us more.
Yes.
We want more clout. Awesome.
Yeah. Nice positive news for Christmas.
Yeah. So a little more positive news for Christmas. This is sort of just a quick follow-up. We talked about this last week briefly because it came up. The AT&T/T-Mobile merger.
Positive news?
Positive news. Well, it's positive news if you believe in free market capitalism. Touché. I don't know if you can call this positive news. It depends on your perspective. But the T-Mobile AT&T merger has officially come to an end. AT&T has withdrawn their request.
So sad.
And from what I've read, it sounds like it's more of it's actually more of just a on hold thing. One thing that happens if you end a major merger like that is that it changes how much taxes you have to pay at the end of the year. Hmm. So both companies are going to get a huge tax break for it not working out.
Weird. Yeah. Well, I knew that T-Mobile got a huge kickback. It was like $3 or $4 billion because it didn't go through.
Right. So for them, they're all. That's the timing.
So you really think that they're going to initiate talks back again?
The thought is, and this is, you know, this gets a little more into politics and I like to get onto this show, but the thought is that they believe that a Republican president would be a little more pro massive industry, you know, massive monopolistic companies getting together.
Okay.
And so if President Obama didn't win again, there would be a high likelihood that they would reinitiate the talks trying to get it with a more sympathetic administration. Mm. But, you know, who knows? Who knows really what, you know, what's going on? And that's just speculation on the timing. So it may not be over. But I have read a couple articles that say T-Mobile really feels like it's in dire straits and they're trying to get rid of everything. And so there's talks now that T-Mobile might be trying to push upon themselves off onto Sprint since the AT&T merger didn't work. So we'll see what happens with that. But for now, America still has 4 major telecoms.
Yay! Competition's good. It's good.
Yeah. I think ultimately that's what's good for us. Talking about more ending stuff. This is pretty crazy. So netbooks have been, for the last 5 years, been sort of the massive growing market. And then all of a sudden, this small Cupertino company came out with this novel idea of an iPad. And all of a sudden, netbooks haven't been selling as well. And so sort of a sign of the times and a change in transition, Dell has officially put their netbook or their consumer-level netbook on ice. And they have no plans of continuing to make them. This is coming from TheVerge.com.
Now, what the heck is up with Dell? They don't seem to have, like, a clear direction. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we're going to be good at. I mean, I, you know, Michael Dell left and they kind of just been floundering ever since. And I mean, and I realize he's back, but I don't feel like he's really grabbed the bull by the horns. He had a really good idea back when Dell first started to do the, you know, mass customization, really lean manufacturing stuff. It was awesome. But I just don't feel like they've, you know, I felt like they went, oh, we'll just keep that model going for all these other products. However, every single other manufacturer does that too. And so their competitive advantage is gone. I just, I don't know. It's, what's up with them? Because then they just recently quit their Dell streak too, like their 7 or 5 inch tablet.
Yeah, they're sort of cutting products right now. Not sort of. They're actually cutting products. And what I think is interesting is that they're cutting the extremely low margin devices. They're not getting rid of their laptops. They're not getting rid of their desktops. They're getting rid of the netbooks. The biggest problem people have said is that even if you sell 100 of them, you're not going to make enough money to keep operating. They're so low margin that even when they're selling like crazy, they're not great business. And so I think what you're actually seeing is you're seeing Dell finally do what's the most difficult thing sometimes to do in business, which is to say no.
Okay. Well, that's good. I like companies who do that. I wish HP did that more.
And I sort of respect this move from Dell, and I don't have any problem with Dell in particular, but I agree there's no real competitive advantage that they're bringing to the table, that they're saying we do this better than everybody else, from price point to customer service to whatever.
And just to be totally clear and fair, I think the exact same thing about HP.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, HP, they're doing some cool things, and it's mostly because I get to see it. None of it's really commercial or, you know, being sold, which is kind of a bummer. But I just, especially in the PC arena for HP, I don't see anything. They're going through the same struggles.
Right.
As well.
Yeah, I agree with that as well.
All right, well, cool. One more thing I can take off my wish list.
I know. Well, I kind of wanted to continue on this. I don't know. We've briefly mentioned this, but Dell's not the only one. Acer is also talking about spinning off their netbook division.
So you think this is the end of netbooks?
Yeah, I actually think that this is the sign of the times. This is, you know, there will always be ultralight, ultra portables, but I think that you're going to start to see their price increase and come more in parity with middle round tablets at like $500.
So you're going to see more like MacBook Air clones,
right? And
so a bigger screen but really skinny, maybe no DVD drive,
right? Because they're just
flash or
the profit margin,
solid state storage.
Yeah, the profit margin on them is so small, and people aren't buying them anymore.
Makes sense.
So companies are having to really ditch that.
Well, mentality. Why would you spend $500 on a mini when you could just get an iPad that has cool apps built in? Because I mean, you're not gonna do heavy duty work on that machine,
yeah?
Are you?
No, I have a friend who has one of these little netbooks. And he's in one of my programming classes, and he comes in and he sets it up and he plugs into the monitor and he brings his own keyboard with him and his own mouse. Wow. And so all it is this tiny little thing that just sits in the middle of the desk. And I just laugh at it because I'm like, why would you do that? And he goes, well, I don't like the small screen when I don't have to, but I want the ultra portable thing. And I was like, you bring a full keyboard and mouse with you everywhere.
Yeah, I have.
Defeats the purpose. Yeah. I've seen that.
I empathize with them. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But,
I get the idea of wanting to be able to bring your super light computer with you everywhere. But I think that the strategy that people come up with to deal with that, oftentimes, yeah, the strategy that they come up to deal with the size, people realize after owning one that they don't. Doesn't work as well as they want it to.
Well, you know what? That's cool. Good for Dell for pulling the plug. I think HP still sells their minis. But you know, that's HP. We're going to sell it forever. Cool. All right.
Awesome. Very cool.
Do I get to keep going? Totally sounds like someone is ironing outside
of
our room.
I'm pretty sure someone's ironing outside of our room. I hope that doesn't show up on the podcast.
We'll see.
We'll edit it down in post.
No, we won't.
No, we won't. So, okay, cool. I'm just going to keep rolling on this.
Do it.
So this is kind of a short little thing. We got a video that you guys got to check out at furloughbros.com. It is awesome. And part of what's so awesome about it is that it combines a number of technologies together that are all super simple to use. It doesn't require a lot of tech savviness to put the whole thing together, but the end result is well, simply amazing. Essentially what it is it's a piano that is used, I can't remember what the name, the type of piano it is. It's one of those learning pianos where the keys play for you.
Okay.
But it's a modern day sophisticated one where you can play basically any song, and you actually just play the MP3 on it.
It's a Yamaha Disclaver.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I don't know.
And essentially, what you can play whatever song you want. It's as just a song, and it will recreate the song using your keys. So it's a very sophisticated piano.
Whoa.
But it's easy to use. And so essentially, what this dude did is he got an AirPort Express from Apple. He connected it to his piano. So using AirPlay, he can play songs from his phone, play it through the AirPort Express onto the piano, which is very cool, except he has an iPhone 4S. And so the end result is all he does is he presses the button, says, "Hey Siri, can you play this song for me?" And the piano starts playing it.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, and the reason why I wanted to mention it is, you know, it's sort of just a cool tech demo, but I think one of the things that Apple has been really, really great at over the years is building those easy-to-use interfaces that are easy to use on.
That's good. Easy-to-use interfaces that are easy to use.
Yeah. But they're easy to use on both ends, both the output end and the input end.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's not something that they get a lot of credit for. And obviously, you have to use Apple compatible technology for at least two of the components, but you've got this third party machine that's really powerful, a really sophisticated piece of technology, and you know, I think what you end up with in the end is you start to combine these very sophisticated building blocks, like super advanced Legos, and so they end up building these crazy powerful systems. And I think, you know, a piano that plays itself is neat and novel, but not necessarily useful in most traditional senses. But I think as soon as you, like, start to get you know, start to build in more sophisticated stuff into, like, your refrigerator, for example, or your oven, or your heating system in your house.
So you bring that up, and at Google's I/O event last year, I don't remember the name of it, but they, it was something like, you know, public sharing or something like that. But basically they've created, and I believe it was through Bluetooth or NFC, but they created an API protocol where they said if any other manufacturer in the world can talk to our phones using this API, nice, data spreading. And so they're already heading in that direction. I'd love to see Apple copy them,
yeah,
to do this. And quite honestly, I'd love to see some sort of standard protocol exist so that it didn't matter what phone you had.
Right.
It could always work. But the idea, yeah, that'll happen. the example that they showed at Google I/O was they had a treadmill. And they said, you know, you start working on the treadmill and it'll track all your stats on your phone for you.
Nice.
And maybe it'll play like your music and it'll if I remember correctly, or I'm making it up because I wanted to do this, if you start going faster, it'll give you songs to pump you up and get you going a little bit faster.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, and then they talked about like doing light bulbs. Was another company where they had a prototype where you could turn on lights using your phone, and I'm sure like a refrigerator and washing machine, you know, have all those appliances in your house be able to communicate with your phone to give you status updates. Oh, the lights are on. The alarm is set. Oh, you know, yeah, start the laundry now or something. Feed my dog, whatever.
And I think the idea of a smart house is something that people have wanted for a long time, a house that you walk into a room and the lights turn on, or you can unlock and lock the doors, or you can know what's in your refrigerator based on, you know, it all communicating together. And for the longest time, the only real way you could do that was to build, you know, a really sophisticated microprocessor center in your house.
Right.
And
yeah, now it's literally in your pocket and can go anywhere.
Right.
And so, and I think this piano is just an example of the beginnings of that.
Right. And that to me is why it's so exciting. I wanted to bring it up.
That's very cool. That's very exciting. So you went on a little trip last week.
Yeah, man. So it's Christmas time, and because I'm the sort of guy that likes to plan ahead, I waited till the very last minute to do all my Christmas shopping in one big shebang. And so Tuesday, I went to the mall, local mall, and decided to pick up some amazing gifts for friends and family. And
you shouldn't have.
I know. I mean, yeah, I should have. And so while I was out, I was with one of my cousins, and we stopped, or as we're going through, we noticed this store, and the Apple store had moved locations, because we were familiar with where the Apple store was in the mall. And all of a sudden, we looked at each other and went, that's not an Apple store. That just looks exactly like an Apple store.
Ooh, all right.
That's a Microsoft store.
Oh, man.
So we got
really? It looks just like it.
Oh, from the outside, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. And so we were like, well, we got to check this out, because this is the, you know, the big deal. This is the Microsoft store.
Yeah.
And so we, so evidently there's one in the area. So we trekked on in and went inside. And
yeah, what's it like?
An Apple store.
Okay.
The guys wear, like...
They're selling Apple products. It's amazing.
I know. sometimes it's hard to tell. They wear the same t-shirts, jeans. They have the same dress code. Their name tags look like they're made by the same manufacturer.
Wow.
They just have a different slip in there. So instead of an Apple logo, it's the Windows logo.
All right. Super creative.
They've got the same setup where it's like one side of the store is all like desktops and we have more serious computers. The other side's all like tablet computers.
Okay.
They've got accessories in the back.
Oh, tablet computers.
Yeah, slate computers.
Ah.
I have to correct myself.
Those are HPs then.
Yeah, it looks like some of them were.
Nice.
Some of them were Asus too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
we don't care.
Those are stupid.
I don't care. Sorry.
There were also, they had a bunch of, or bunch, they had like three 360 set up.
I guess they make those.
Yeah. They had a game collection. They actually had in the back, this was kind of cool. They, I want to give credit where credit's due. They did some cool things. One of the things that they had was in the back, they had this massive monitor and they had, not Natal, they had Kinect running on a 360. And so you could go in the back and like play football on a huge screen.
That's cool.
Without a controller. Yeah, that was pretty neat to see. And my cousin scored a touchdown and wouldn't brag to everybody. He's pretty excited about it.
Nice.
But we also got to walk around and see all this stuff. But, you know, and so as the sort of shock of how much it looks like an Apple store wear it off, I decided to do a little more investigating.
Oh, man. All right. This is the investigation piece.
So first we sat down at some of their low-end slate computers.
Okay.
They were atrocious. They had all frozen.
Oh.
I couldn't believe it. I just thought it was so funny. Like I was just laughing because I was like, this is a joke. This is funny. This is not real. Like these things have crashed on us.
Wow.
So, you know, we were trying to find one that worked, but couldn't find one. And so eventually we were going around the different parts of the store and trying out some of the laptops and stuff. And, you know, they've got all their, they're high-end laptops, which is fun to play with because, you know, they got some pretty powerful computers in there. And their accessory department's got some super impressive accessories. They totally copied the Apple thing of, we're going to get all the high-end accessories that you can order online, but we're going to put them so you can actually hold them and look at them.
That's fair.
Which is neat. I mean, I actually think that that's one of the coolest part of the Apple stores. So I don't mind the fact that they copied that in principle. And then as we came around, ended up talking to a guy that worked there. I'm going to come back to that in a second. But I finally got to check out some of their Slate computers, their full Slate computers. And these things have like i5 processors in them. They've got like 4 gigs of RAM. They have 64 or 120 28 gigabytes.
So they're real flash drives.
Oh yeah, and I played with them, and I was actually very impressed by the performance. You know, they are.
So now the one gotcha is, what's the battery life like on those?
Battery life is about 2.5 hours. So
like a regular computer.
You know, yeah, about a quarter of an iPad. Couldn't make it through a long flight if you wanted to. And the other issue that came up was, the least expensive of their high-end Slate computers was $1,200. They went all the way to $1,700.
That's tough.
So there's definitely they're going to have a problem finding a compelling price point. And what I thought was really funny was all of them were set up so you could touch them, which was cool, except they also had a keyboard and mouse Bluetooth set up right next to them.
Really?
Every single one. They literally, just how they set them up, you were not encouraged to actually touch them. And the problem is that Windows 7, which I'll give them credit, was running beautifully on the tablet, is not designed for a touch interface. It's just not designed for that. So they don't set it up so you can use it like that.
Yeah, but why? Okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. Why even sell it? Why advertise it that way if it's not designed for that?
I know.
Why just be patient and wait?
That's sort of where I was coming from. Well, the problem is that I think that they feel they need something. They need a competitive product, even if it has no competitive advantage.
Okay.
That way they've got their low-end affordable tablets that don't run well. So if you want one of those, you can. Or you can get one of the ones that run well but are kind of pointless. But you can say, well, Windows has had a tablet around for a year, so it's cool. You know, and it's sort of...
Yeah, I guess.
I think it sort of keeps the mentality that they had with their classic tablet computers, where you could, like, flip it around, and then you can use, you know, touch... You can use your stylus on your 8-pound laptop, and it was like, awesome, this is really heavy. But now they're light, and they're compact, and you can use it on the go. You know, I think that there are some usage cases where it would make sense. One of the interesting things that the Microsoft Store did was they didn't stop you from downloading stuff and starting executables,
really?
Which I thought was sort of a huge gaping security hole. I uploaded Chrome because I like using Chrome, so I wanted to try it out.
Downloaded Chrome
and installed it on their computer.
That is so mean.
Yeah.
Do you think they reset them every day? Or?
I think
they do.
Because
I'm pretty sure, I feel like the Apple stores actually do literally reset every single device every night.
They do. And so I'm sure Microsoft does something similar. If they don't do it every night, they do it frequently. It was interesting talking...
That's funny, though.
Yeah, talking to the guy, I asked him about the fact that some of their...
Well, can you... No, it requires a password to install something on a Mac.
Yeah.
So you can't do it. Huh.
Now, Chrome's a little weird because they have some sophisticated technology that sometimes you're able to do, like, temporary installs and stuff and that don't really change... That don't change the registry. And so that might have been the reason why Chrome worked when other programs might not have. But still, Chrome's a pretty powerful application that I was able to just up and load onto their computer.
Wow.
What I thought was interesting was actually talking with the guy. And so I've been saving this for the end because I let him give me the full sales pitch.
So, before you give me the sales pitch, how many people were in the store?
Oh, it was packed.
Oh, okay.
It was actually packed.
Wow.
I, you know, now the Apple store was more packed, But right. It's Christmas, and, you know, you could sit down and the difference was there. Most of the computers were, well, actually, now that I think about it, that's not true. Most of the computers were open. You could just sit down and play with whichever one you wanted. You didn't usually have to wait. Whereas in the Apple Store, you know, there was the classic, in the Apple Store, you know, your classic, every iPad was taken and you had to wait 10 minutes for somebody to step off.
Okay. So we're just really busy. So talking to the guy.
Okay. So I'm talking to this sales guy and he's wearing the t-shirt. Ask me why I choose my Windows phone. So I walked up and said, "Hey, why do you choose your Windows phone?" And I tried to play stupid at first so that I could get like the full sales pitch. I didn't want to walk in and be like, I kind of know the differences. I feel like I'm a well-educated person. I wanted to get his honest and full opinion. And he was not very nice and gave me the whole thing. And it was interesting hearing him talk about what he liked about the Windows phone compared to the iPhone compared to Android phones. Because he said originally he has never owned an iPhone, but he had friends that had used it. And one of his main concerns with it was that at the time it was original iPhone, you couldn't change anything. Like you couldn't change the background. You couldn't change this tone. You couldn't change that tone. So he went and got an Android phone. Because you wanted to be able to customize it.
Okay.
What was crazy was he's sitting there and he's talking to me and we kind of get into what he liked to do with his Android phone and essentially he was like, yeah, in order to like keep it updated, I actually had to do like the whole rootkit thing and I had to get into the computer and I had to get different bootloaders so that I could keep different things working. And he goes, and it was just, he felt like keeping his Android phone up and running and at its peak performance was kind of like running around and keeping plates spinning. You know, you're just constantly trying to fix it. And he said when all he really wanted to do was to be able to change the ringtone on when he got text messages.
And he had to do all of that to change the ringtone?
So that's what he said. Okay. I have a suspicion that he actually really enjoyed being able to get into his phone. And he realized that there's a real trade-off there of usability and reliability.
Right.
He also mentioned the whole fragmentation thing in the app market and how that was a real frustration for him and how it took him a tremendous amount of work to get just a few apps to work on his phone that they weren't designed for that phone. And so he really kind of grew into this area of frustration. And the reason he switched to his Windows phone was because it was more customizable and it was easier to get into than an iPhone, but it had all the same security and reliability things of an iPhone. And
I hear they're good phones.
Yeah.
I dropped something. But I look at them, like it's just, yeah, they were good. I look at them and they look cool. Like their idea of, you know, you're the window and there's a bigger canvas behind it, and you're scrolling around the canvas. Yeah. I think it's a cool metaphor. I think it works well.
Yeah, and you know the whole live tile things. You know, it's neat.
Metro theme.
You know, I didn't see anything wrong with it. And the one thing he did mention was that the nice part about a Windows phone is it has all the same, like I said, it has the same security and reliability of an iPhone. But if you want a bigger phone or a smaller phone or a thicker phone or a longer battery or whatever, there's more options.
Okay, that's fair.
Than an iPhone. Yeah, and I thought those were all fair. And, you know, obviously I come from a place of, yeah, but the iPhone's the right size, so.
So did you ask him about if he, you know, has all the apps that he wants?
I did ask him, and he really played it up as though there was no app problem. There was no lack of apps. There's no issue there. Okay. It's cool. There's everything I want is there, which I think was the sales pitch. Personally, I find it unlikely that a guy who went from rootkitting his Android in order to get every single thing he wanted on it is now satisfied by an app store that's really small. And one of the red herrings that he threw out there was, he was like, you know, the Microsoft Store has more apps at this point in its life cycle than any other app store had at its this point, at the same point in their life cycle.
That's fantastic.
I was going to say, that's great news, except you're trying to tell me that you've got more apps than the App Store did a year in, when the App Store invented the market.
Yeah.
People had to design special UIs for this new thing, and all they did was port it to yours, and that's supposed to be really impressive? Okay. Now it is good news for Microsoft. They are ramping up the number of apps that they have, but I don't necessarily know how impressed I am by that statistic alone. That does seem a little disingenuous to me, because a year in, everybody felt like they were still in the middle of the app gold rush. There's still tons of apps to be made. There were still huge missing parts of the app ecosystem. And so I feel like that's actually not as great of a thing as he was trying to make it sound. But, you know, in all fairness, that's a lot of apps still. And then, but I did also get to ask him about Windows 8. And that was a pretty interesting conversation.
Oh, okay. Because
I asked him if he'd use it, and he said, yeah, actually, I have the developer's build, and so I've been using that for a while.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm looking forward to the beta, because I think that will be an interesting, you know, and it's more in its final stage.
Right.
But he said that he really liked the whole idea of the Metro usage. And he said he doesn't have a touchscreen at home. He's only got a keyboard and a mouse. But even with the keyboard and mouse, the Metro-style thing was actually really easy to use, he thought. And he thought was actually an improvement over the classic Windows UI.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, which I thought was an interesting, you know, comment. And you know, this guy clearly knew what he's talking about. But, I don't know, it was definitely an interesting experience. And I couldn't believe how much it looked like the Apple Store. But but it was cool. And, you know, Microsoft's clearly, they got a plan. They're going forward. And we'll see how that strategy works for them.
Yeah, nice. Huh, very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm going to switch to something completely different. And let's talk Super Bowl.
Dun, 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 dun.
So they actually announced, or NBC announced a little while ago, that they were going to start streaming games. But here's what's cool. The conference championships and the Super Bowl itself is going to be live streamed on NBC.
Nice.
They're using the whatever Microsoft's
Silverlight.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
They're using that to stream it, which is fine because I got Netflix and so I use it anyways. But I was just like, man, that's awesome, because I know that's the big complaint about cord cutters like myself, people who don't have access, who don't have cable. You know, it's like you can't watch live events is the number one big complaint. Unless you have Justin TV, then most of the time you can. but you know, that it's clunky, it requires work on your part, and you know, it's just not the easiest thing to do. So you know, so it's nice to, you know, to have it, you know, somewhat the original content producer offering it to you. And so it's just very cool. I'm actually still probably gonna go over to some person's house and watch it.
Right.
Live, but just the idea, or watch it on a television, but just the idea that they're starting to stream stuff like they're doing with the Olympics, you know, is very cool. Like they did with the World Cup, I guess. You know, it's awesome, basically, that they're starting to do that stuff and it's starting to go online. It's going to make it more pervasive for cable people, subscribers, to get rid of it, which I think is pretty cool. Pretty cool indeed.
I think, you know, a year ago, we were talking about the fact that the biggest problem with piecing together your own entertainment networks, as it were, you know, Netflix and Hulu and those sorts of things, was the live episode or the live specialty episodes. And the two we came up with as your quintessential examples were the Super Bowl and the Oscars.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is one that's taken care of. And the most interesting part about this to me, or exciting part, is that the Super Bowl is the most watched show on Earth every year. So the amount of data that they're going to have to serve up simultaneously in order to serve the number of people who are going to want to be able to watch it live, from whatever capacity, it will probably be the most watched online video event.
Other than the idea that, you know, people are going to have parties at their house, and so.
And that's why I say.
But someone like me, I could now say, hey, party's at my place now.
Right.
Because I got the game. I don't have to go to someone else's, which is, I don't know, it's pretty cool. I'd be cool. They actually have an app. I think it's an iPad app that lets you, I forget what it's called, but it's like NFL replay or something. So you can watch the game sequentially, but you can also rewind and rewatch plays if you wanted to.
Nice.
And then it's got the stat ticker on the side where you can see the player stats and what's going on live. You don't have to wait for the announcers to tell you what it is. You can just see it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. That's actually how I watched the World Cup soccer games last summer. Last summer, where I had it, streaming on ESPN.com, and then I had the live stream, but then I also had their stat stream right next to it.
Yeah.
So then I could see the stats of the game as it was going on.
Nice.
It was cool. And then I had a Twitter stream right next to it, so I could get the, I could cheer with people.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was neat. So. Yeah, just exciting. Very cool. I'm glad to see the world's headed in that direction because I'm already there, so it's, come join me.
Cool. All right, man. Continuing this trek of what's going to be going on in 2012, the Nexus team, so the guys that built the Google Nexus phone and the next Nexus team, it's been announced that they are building a tablet. They're designing a tablet. Part of the reason why I wanted to bring this up really quickly is because the Nexus phone, both of the ones that they've developed so far, were supposed to be the state of the art as far as Google was concerned. This is the best phone used, fully taking advantage of our Google operating system as it was. And it was sort of supposed to be this. It's not actually supposed to be a widely used consumer product so much as it's supposed to be showing their OEMs, this is what you can do.
Though ironically, the OEMs wanted to sell widely consumer products, so I don't know if they would copy them, which they haven't so far. So.
Right.
But it's supposed to be like the pure Android experience and have all the bells and whistles.
Right. And so pretty exciting because they're sitting down and they're going to be building a tablet. So presumably, this will be the best iPad competitor to date as far as performance and usability goes.
You think it'll unseat the Kindle Fire?
I don't know. I think the Kindle Fire will unseat itself if they don't do anything to fix complaints. They're starting to make fun of it on late night shows, which is always a bad sign because a narrative is beginning to build that it's not a great device. And if after Christmas there's a lot of returns and stuff, that's going to be that will be a disaster for.
Yeah, Amazon, I don't know. That price point is just right.
Yeah, it's compelling. Right. And that's the reason why I think that the Nexus tablet will not at all have any market share compared to the Kindle Fire.
Okay.
But I think what'll be exciting, hopefully, is that you'll get to see a real slim tablet with a lot of features in it that it'll be powerful.
That'd be cool.
And you'll get to see, this is what the Google tablet is capable of doing. I look forward to playing with it and buying an iPad. So.
All right.
I'll leave that decision until we actually get there, I guess. So, cool.
So, let's talk iPhone.
All right, man. This continues on this path of this article that I was reading. It's called iPhone is Killing Mobile Carriers. I think that title was given to get clicks because it's... the iPhone is accredited for kind of changing the mentality of carriers design the phone, OEMs build the phone, or they specify what the phone should have, OEMs design and build it based on the specifications, and then the carriers sell it. So the carriers get the beginning and end control. Well, the iPhone changed that. They decided they wanted to build it the way that they wanted to build it, and everything was going to go from there. Well, obviously, the iPhone isn't the only phone that does that anymore. The Windows phones have gone down that path. Every Android phone has gone down that path. So it really is the modern smartphone that I think is killing mobile carriers. But what this guy is making the argument is that essentially and is brought up by the AT&T and T-Mobile merger. But what essentially he's saying is that these really, really powerful high-end devices that use a tremendous amount of data are crushing the mobile telecoms.
So let me get this straight. The telecoms pricing model was based off of an old generation phone that didn't use a lot of data.
Right.
And now that we have modern phones which are using a ton of data, just so happens that the telecoms didn't properly structure their data plans to account for this new level of usage.
Right.
Which is understandable because it literally did not exist ahead of time.
Right. And from their perspective, where they used to specify things like how much data they'd expect it to use, all of a sudden Apple comes in and says, well, we want it to use as much as we want it to use. We want the user to determine that. That changes the relationship of the telecom to the device to the end user, and they're saying that it's causing a lot of problems. And what the article said, which I appreciate, is it wasn't just talking about hypotheticals. It basically its argument was you can't argue with the bottom line. They're going broke trying to build up an infrastructure that can that can stabilize that much data use. And they actually think it's the reason why T-Mobile wanted to make a deal with AT&T is because they can't afford to upgrade their network to keep up. And so when they combined AT&T and T-Mobile, suddenly you'd have the financial backing to upgrade both systems. And it's still going to cost AT&T a ton of money and still going to crush their bottom line. Which is a concern.
It's a weird problem that they have, because ideal in an ideal world, what you'd love to say is set your prices to where they actually should be.
Right.
Do the math, figure that out. Whatever you want your profit margin to be, do it. And yes, you're going to watch your customers fall like a rock, but now you're going to be making money.
Right.
And then you can provide a better quality of service, and then it'll slowly improve over time, and then you'll pull more people in who are willing to pay more for it.
Right.
I mean, that's the, because they realize, oh, they actually have a genuinely better product. The problem that they run into is that there's a huge fixed cost associated with that. What I just described works great for a variable cost model.
Right.
Like if you're selling an app, you can say, you know what, I'm going to jack the price up to whatever I think it should be for reels. And then if I only sell 5 instead of selling 50, okay, whatever. I don't care.
Right.
My server costs will, they will reflect however many users I have. It's all in line. The problem that these guys have is that whether you have, a million customers, or or like 50 million customers, you still have to have nationwide coverage.
Right.
And it has to be good everywhere you're at.
Right.
And so there's this real problem where they have, where they would love to raise the price, but if their market share drops too much, their costs are still the same and they're still losing money.
Yeah.
And now they just have angry customers.
Right.
So I think what they're ultimately going to have to do is boil the pot on us very slowly.
Right.
And slowly ratchet things up, which they're kind of doing now, because AT&T just came out this week, I guess. And, told high-end users or high-usage people that they're going to start really capping their bandwidth down. Which, by the way, I mean, these are the people who are on the unlimited plans.
Yeah.
And they're now considering high-usage people above 2 gigs of data a month.
Right.
It's not just the 5%. And right. So that's some of the stuff that they're starting-ish to do. It's a tough place. I would not like to be in their position, because they built their pricing models off of an old system where they could get away skewing it the way that they did.
Yeah.
And they were not prepared at all for this new level of usage.
Right. And the only comment I want to make in all of this, or I want to make two comments. The nicest gift that Apple ever gave the American telecoms was to not release an LTE phone with the iPhone 4S. That was just the kindest thing they could have done, because now they don't have to, they can actually fortify their platform for the largest single selling phone to and Android doesn't feel like they have to keep up, and everybody doesn't jump to the next generation. It gives all the major telecoms another year to kind of retrofit their system and to prepare for
the onslaught. They're gonna try, but they're
not gonna be ready. But at least
they're already two steps behind.
At least they got another year,
I guess. Yeah.
And then, but the other comment I want to make is that, you know, I think what's, you know, this Atlantic piece, I understand where they're coming from, and I appreciate you trying to change the perspective for a second and, you know, like, let's look at the actual business of this. But I think what's going to happen is 5 years from now, this will be settled, whether it's through, you know, pricing points.
I actually see it becoming more of an issue.
I think at some point, you know,
I think they're going to bankrupt themselves.
With the collapse of like T-Mobile and stuff.
You keep talking. I gotta plug in power.
Okay, I've got an outlet for you right here. I think with like the collapse of T-Mobile, what you're going to see is you're gonna see companies collapse. And when the companies finally collapse, you'll realize that there's nothing we can do here. You know, and we do have to change the model. We do have to change how things work.
I could see them, though, get themselves to a point where they're dead. Or, you know, they're on the verge of death. So let's see here. I got a three-pronger. Is this going to be a problem?
This might be a problem. Right behind you, right down here. This is why. So just to dictate everybody, James's computer just let us know that the primary recording device just let us know that he's almost out of batteries and the show's gonna
I got 8 minutes.
Come to a quick end. Right? You wanna push this box forward.
Being pushed forward.
And then reach in right where the white plug plugs in. There's an outlet right there, three prongs.
Oh my gosh.
This is pretty exciting. I think James is
gonna only have to, you guys can see this.
I know, this is classic live audio entertainment.
We need to move the guns and butter.
Oh gosh. That's never something you want to hear online. Okay, he is stretching. He's stretching as far as he can. So
success.
This brings us to another topic: wireless power. I actually don't have anything on it this week, even though that's sort of a soft spot.
I'm good. Power. I'm good.
So, yeah, so essentially, okay, we're
hopefully
back.
Hopefully don't get that clicking noise.
I know. So we're back on. We're good to go. So back to what we were talking about. I think that what you're going to see is you're going to see a major upset. It's going to get really, really ugly. And like most things, when you get too close to the fire, you pull away, you get a couple boils, but in the end, you figure out where you were supposed to be standing all along. The telecoms are getting pretty close to the fire, and their customer base doesn't really understand. And we're going to watch a company like T-Mobile or Sprint or AT&T really have, you know, a tremendous, huge problems. And things are going to shift really quickly, and we're going to find another solution that kind of works its way out.
There's a couple situations that could play out, and, you know, we'll see. But one of them is, like, personally, they're really in a tough place right now because you literally cannot jack up your prices to what they should be because customers are going to revolt.
Right.
And within 2 years, you're going to be out of customers. Right. And I honestly don't think, I mean, you could get a company like Verizon who goes, cool, we'll take advantage of this. Maybe. AT&T literally should have done it the instant the iPhone came out. And I just don't think they knew that it was going to be a problem.
Uh-huh.
And it caught them by surprise because they had something exclusive, a reason for customers to sign up before, you know, they say, I don't care about price right now. I'm going to sign up and I'm going to do this. And they didn't take advantage of that. And they are all going to press the envelope to try to, you know, another solution for all of them would say, hey, we're going to hang out on 3G longer till we can get the money to properly invest in the better, you know, network. But they're not going to because they're competing against each other. They are constantly going to press the envelope and they're going to take a bet that everyone's going to keep signing up and keep going in there, and it's going to be pins and needles. And if there's one hiccup in this entire process...
Are you trying to suggest that it's a bit of a big Ponzi scheme going on right
now? No, not a Ponzi scheme. It's just they are all taking very, very big risks. And here's the other thing that could happen is that they spend all this money building out these networks, and then some new technology comes along and totally disrupts the entire model.
And that's kind of why, that's I guess why I say, you know, maybe 5 years is a little premature, but I think that that's eventually what's going to happen, is there's going to be a new model for long distance communication, whether it's some sort of WiMAX or, you know, some sort of a, you know, or it's, you know, the rumors of Apple buying data and developing their own network, yeah, quote unquote. I think that this is pointing out how terrible of an idea that is, because it would be unbelievably expensive to actually manage that sort of a thing. There's no,
I think bottom line is we are not paying enough right now.
Right. I agree. And, you know, yeah, you're seeing that in their profit margins. They're doing everything they can to compete against each other. And I guess that, you know, kind of, you know, the whole idea of the, you know, of what's it called? T-Mobile, the AT&T T-Mobile merger, you know, that was going to get rid of some of the competition that might have made it easier to make these kind of changes. But at the same time, it's going to benefit the consumer longer because prices will stay down longer as well. T-Mobile tries to continue to compete. So I don't know. Yeah. It's such a mess. This will be a fascinating and exciting one to kind of watch over the years. And, you know, as my bloodlust for watching companies die happens, I'm sure we're going to get one or two more to excite me as the years go on.
Makes sense. So once again, I'm going to switch topics to another product that I saw this week that I thought was very interesting. So I help out a realtor in my area with certain projects and stuff, just because I happen to be good at the computadora. And so I saw this and I shared it with him, and I just thought it was really cool. It's Open Home Pro is the name of a company who makes an iPad app for realtors. And I personally think this is an industry that could really use iPad apps. You know, as a landlord, I immediately think, you know, mobile is a place to go.
Right.
And what this app does is, they said, like, the number one problem is getting people who come to, like, an open house to get their contact information to follow up with them.
Mm.
And so they've created a very cool way and a fun way for people to provide their information so that you can follow up with them. And then it has, like, a very lightweight CRM, customer relationship management system.
Nice.
That, you know, reminds them, hey, this person saw this property. You haven't talked to them in 2 weeks or nice. You know, whatever. They were interested in these types of properties, and now you have this new one that came up in the MLS listing.
Right.
You should tell them about it. And so it does all of that within this app. And then the other thing, it'll let them actually, like, flip through photos and see the information of the property with this iPad app. There's a part of me that's like, you almost want to, like, when they walk in, hand them the iPad.
Right.
And say, here, this is almost like a museum tour. You know, this is your not partner, but, you know, whatever. This goes with you, and it's a supplement, there we go, to viewing the house. And so it would be neat if you could, you know, you get it, and it has, like, some stats. This is a one-bedroom, one-bath, and you walk in, and it'd be awesome if it could do, like, some AR, some augmented reality. Like, you walk into the bathroom, and it says, you know, and it pops up little facts and figures. The size of the bathroom is this. It's got a fan that pulls in this much stuff. It's got a low flush toilet, you know, whatever.
Right.
Same with the bedroom. Oh, it's a bedroom with a walk-in closet. And it gives you some of the features and the highlights. Oh, this is the heating system. It can do blah, 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 blah. Energy, electricity used per month or electricity cost is X number of dollars. You know, I think that kind of stuff would be, like, awesome. And then you could take it where it's like, I would like to put a couch in here. And maybe you got, like, a little couch that you could slide in, and you could see what it would look like in the room. And so you could start to build your own home on this iPad. And then maybe throughout the tour, it could ask you questions. Like, and it'd be cool if it did it Siri style. Hi, what's your name? And, you know, and then you, you know, and then it could, you know, slowly get information from you. You know, like, you could say, how crazy would this be? Well, what's your address so I can compare this place to your current place? And so you put in your address. Okay, now I've got your address. But then it'll say, this place is 3 times as big. Or, oh, it's about the same size. Oh, this one has an extra bedroom for you. Here's different things you could do with it or whatever. I don't know. But I'm just throwing out cool ideas. Hopefully Open Home is listening. we should interview them too. And, but this idea, you know, just different things that you could do with it. I think, applications like this have a huge, opportunity for like realtors. Obviously education is a huge place where we've already seen great things. And I think we're just literally tip of the iceberg right now on that.
Yeah.
But this is something where I was like, oh, this is genuinely cool that, people could use. I know for me, I'm going to have it where the next time our place comes up to rent, I'm going to have maybe a QR code or some sort of URL where someone can come up with their phone, tap it, and it's going to have a virtual tour for them right there on the phone. They don't have to walk inside to see it. And they'll be able to get my contact information. They could call me right then and there. It tells all the, you know, here's the specifics behind the rent agreement. You know, it's going to have all of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be cool.
Awesome.
So I think it's a cool app. I think that entire industry is really opening up to some cool possibilities with tablets and mobile devices.
Yeah, and especially I liked your point of, you know, in an open house scenario where you may not have enough realtors to kind of manage all the people that's there, having a virtual realtor that's basically giving them a guided tour, you know, can be really powerful, and you can, you know, yeah, and I think that could really assist realtors, yeah, and everything that they're doing.
So speaking of the role of technology in the future, I recently saw the fourth Mission Impossible movie.
Dun 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 dun.
Da da. So I saw it. It's a good movie. From a, you know, there's not as many twists as normal, but I won't give away anything, other than to say that also totally feels like one big Apple commercial.
Really?
I kid you not. So at the, like, for example, at the very end when they get their like their next mission,
yeah,
they're all using iPhones that are, I guess, gonna blow up, I would guess, because that's what it, or self-destruct, which I was like, man, that's an expensive way to
$700 message.
But then they have other stuff where they use an iPad multiple times.
Really?
Throughout the movie.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, yeah, and it's, I mean, they hide the logo to a point, but like,
right,
everyone knows exactly what it is that they're seeing.
Right.
So, but very cool, very fun. I think they even have an Apple computer at one point in time, just like an iMac. No, no, not an iMac, like a MacBook that they're using. But anyways, so there's that, right?
Right.
But then they show some really cool technology. There's one point in time where they're driving in the car and they're trying to find somebody. And he's like, I don't know how to get the, you know, it's like, he turned a corner and they missed a corner or something like that. He's like, get me through this street. And so the girl who's sitting next to him immediately does like Minority Report with her hand, pulls up the directions onto the windshield.
Yeah.
That's the kind of translucent. And she's like, she's zooming in on where they are. And somehow they've got a tracking device on his car that is automatically, you know, communicated with the windshield. So, you know, there's some, whatever.
Yeah.
It's future tech, right?
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, take this street, turn here, and she's like rotating it, and I was like, dude, that's pretty awesome, to be honest. I put directions on your windshield, totally makes sense. You know, I've thought of other stuff where, or I've read of other stuff, right, where, you know, they're highlighting lines and they're highlighting signs and it's, you know, telling you get ready to turn. But it was just neat. So if you want to get another perspective on what future spy technology is going to look like, it's a very fun show to watch from that perspective.
Nice. I like that. I'll have to check that out. I enjoy, you know, that, yeah, that's sort of our, you know, Iron Man, the first Iron Man predicted the next 10 years of interfaces. You know, it's always neat to see that sort of stuff. And yeah, I like the whole, the Minority Report, also a Tom Cruise movie, has been, you know, has kind of been the go-to analogy for, you know, gesture-based interface, but the whole idea of, you know, developing these new interfaces that don't require touching so much, but especially with augmented reality, there's some real powerful stuff that's going to be barreling down the...
Get it in my eyes. That's all I'm saying. Give me goggles. Let's make this happen.
Yeah. All right, man. We're working on it.
Good. Good. Speaking of working on it...
Yes!
The race is on. The race is on for the next generation fuel cell powered devices. And what kind of, you know, precipitated this whole thing was Apple filed for a patent for fuel cell charging.
Right.
Now, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about fuel cells. I know that they like run buses or something sometimes, which are slightly bigger than iPhones and computers. But it does talk about like some of the potential advantages, which I feel like they're, you know, just saying we think that this should do this. But the idea is like computers can last for a week and then take like 10 minutes to charge.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So
Start educate here. Me.
Okay, so this is fuel cells 101. So essentially when you have combustion, on a very basic level, you have a fuel, whether that be oxygen, or sorry, whether that's like gasoline or kerosene or hydrogen.
Some sort of lean.
Right. You have some sort of an oxidizer, which is usually oxygen, almost always oxygen.
Okay.
You put those two things together with enough heat, and they slam together. When they do that, they release a bunch of electrons, and chemical changes occur, and it produces a bunch of heat.
Heat, energy.
And then we have methods of capturing that energy. Well, what a fuel cell does is essentially they create extremely tiny small pored materials, but porous materials that allow electrons to pass through.
Okay.
And prevent the explosive reaction, but allow the electrons to actually create those charges. So they have all sorts of fuel cells. They have your classic hydrogen fuel cell, which is clean burning because it produces only water as the byproduct.
Nice.
But they also have methane fuel cells, which are they kind of smell like, but they're extremely energetic. They create a huge amount of electricity.
Oh, interesting.
But they produce carbon dioxide and other pollutants. So a fuel cell isn't perfect, but it allows you to contain extremely energetic materials in a small volume that's stable, and then you can use that energy to power your device. And so Apple is essentially what they've patented is an external fuel cell. It's essentially a fuel cell.
Oh, external.
Yeah. So it's essentially a fuel cell that connects to the MagSafe charger. So it's an external charger is all it is.
But it's that's not as cool.
So this is not as exciting necessarily.
Next story.
Now, what's exciting about it is that it's really applicable. It's something that they can, you know, if they build an effective fuel cell using some sort of sophisticated future technology, whatever.
Sure.
Although now they have a patent and they can just put a their charging interface in it, and every Mac is now compatible, which is cool. But chances are,
okay.
And what Apple has been doing is they've been working on the back end for fuel cell technology, trying to develop some sort of a sophisticated fuel cell technology that will really produce a tremendous amount of electricity. And contain a huge amount of electricity for your devices that they could incorporate into their different mobile devices.
Dangerous, like, do I want one of these things in my pocket?
They can be dangerous because they're generally combustible materials.
Yeah.
But batteries explode too. Okay. And you trust batteries.
I guess.
So it's one of those things where, there is a concern, but you can engineer around it to the point where they're very, very safe. I mean, you think about it, buses drive people, you know, hundreds of people around. There's never been any sort of terrible news, and there's been accidents with fuel cell
buses. Which is different, but okay. All right.
So what's interesting here is, what's clear is that Apple is really, really trying to push for this technology. They clearly think that this is the direction that it's going. They want to be able to do something with that, being able to charge it. And they're piecing together all of the patents that they need to create a system that works for everybody using whatever fuel cell technology they develop, whatever porous material that they're using. So, I don't know. I think this is pretty exciting for mobile power. Because, if you can recharge your, the classic is if you can recharge your phone phone by injecting it with butane like you would a cigarette lighter, and it'll last a week. That's pretty. That's a pretty compelling user case, because you can just inject it, you've got power, and then, or you've got fuel, and then it lasts a long time. And that's always been the argument. It's just sort of weird to think that you'd be using. Yeah. It's odd for us thinking, you know, the plastic battery age, to think of using butane to power your phones. But it's extremely energetic. It's relatively clean and it's powerful.
Cool. Yeah. When do you think we'll see this? Never.
Man. Yeah, there's a little part of me that thinks that they're trying to come up with another solution before they go full bore with that one. But I think that it's clearly Apple's getting closer and closer to if they're going to release the technology, they're getting close to releasing whatever it is in the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
Cool. So, speaking of companies that won't be around for 2 or 3 years, BlackBerry.
You're so mean.
BlackBerry is working on their new operating system, BlackBerry 10, and inside sources from within the company are speaking anonymously, saying it's a failure. The latest operating system for BlackBerry is terrible. They're not going to sell any. They're not going to be able to compete.
What is going on with BlackBerry? They were king of the hill.
You know, I've had friends that worked for BlackBerry, and they basically said it was a company that had a good idea. They got some good engineers, and they developed some good technology, and they had nobody to compete against. So they stopped developing. They lost their powerful, smart engineers, and now they've just got nothing.
Wow.
I've got nothing.
That's classic.
Yeah. You know,
that's why monopolies are bad.
Right. Steve Jobs, he talks about the whole, you know, what happens to big companies.
Yeah.
And you lose all your, you lose your technology people, and it gets taken over by marketing people. And it turns out when somebody comes up with a better product, it doesn't matter how you market your position. If your position's really poor, you're going to lose. And I get this continued feeling that that's what's going on with BlackBerry and I.
So how long do they have?
Man.
I think we already talked about this, right?
I can't remember.
I don't know. Let's pretend like we didn't.
Okay. So that last prediction, even if we put money on it, was wrong. I still sit there. Less than 5 years. I think that the only thing that's going to really hold them on, ironically, are dictatorships. Dictatorships that don't want to switch over to a new system for their government, and they don't really have anything moving them forward. As horrible as that sounds, but I think that the idea that BlackBerry wouldn't be bought in the next couple of years, at least. It just blows my mind. I don't know.
So let's see here.
Okay, we're looking at some financial numbers.
Yep. Okay, so we've got... I feel like... Is this BlackBerry? Why does it say Walt Disney?
Because Diz?
That's not what I want.
You want RIM?
I did recent activity. That's what happened. I saw financials. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Oops. So, RIM, financials.
Right.
Let's do some quick math here.
And what, who are we using here? We're using Google Finance?
Google Finance.
Nice.
Yep. So, there, let's see here. This is from 3 months. Where's the most recent? This one right here. 2011, November 27th. My wife's birthday. Their net income, the number that we care about, is actually positive.
It's $911.
No, $911,000.
Oh.
These have got to be in thousands. They're not millions, are they?
Yeah, that would be shocking if it was in millions.
In millions. It's millions.
Wow.
Well, that's not a ton.
No.
But, so $911 million. They actually made money. They're not losing money.
Yet. I still think they're...
Doesn't matter. They're making money. It is... The amount of money they are making is going down.
Yeah. Continually, regularly, terrifyingly.
So, because if it was negative, I'd say, well, we can calculate how long they have to last. but
what's their current stock price looking?
Their current stock price. I should be able to figure this out. Let's go to summary.
Okay.
$14.
And so just earlier this year, they were at 40, right?
Were they?
I believe so.
Let's find out. At the beginning of 2011... closer to 60.
60? So they've lost $40 in value. They weren't worth 40. That's the amount that they've lost.
All right. Not fantastic.
Yeah. That, man, that graph looks awful. I'll be totally honest.
Let's see. And where were they 2 years ago? Well, they were pretty in the 60s to 70s range.
Yeah.
And now they are...
Let's go back to 2007 really quick, just out of curiosity.
2007?
Back when the iPhone was released.
Back in, they were at 140. The iPhone was released, and they immediately dropped down to 50s, jumped back up to the 80s, 90s for the middle of 2009,
oh.
And then it's just been kind of a slow decline.
Man, they did have a plummet right as the iPhone was.
Well, everyone knew what was happening,
yeah,
except for them, which was why their stock price
plummeted.
We're not worried about them.
Yeah.
These computer guys aren't going to come in and... So, was that Palm
that
said
Palm,
that?
That was Palm.
Okay.
I mean, it's appropriate in the context of the conversation.
So, well, they're making money, so they're not going anywhere quite yet. Hey, as long as you're making money. Hey,
fair enough. That's a good point. You're making money, why not stay around? Stock is a subjective thing, and yeah, they're dying. So I can't wait. I'm popping my popcorn.
Getting your popcorn. Well, we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
They have been in talks recently with a bunch of people about buying them. So far, that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So I think the vultures are circling.
Yeah.
But at least for now, like I said, they're making money. That's a good sign.
Yeah, you know, in the
truth, Palm was not.
Right. That's a good point. You know, the truth is that like Palm, they have a patent portfolio, and there's a compelling reason to buy them if the price is right. And so I think that just like Palm, they'll go through a couple generations where slowly you'll lose the RIM, and then eventually you'll lose the BlackBerry, and it'll just become like sort of a, as it transitions over a period of a couple of years into a non-existent company. Just you know, it's converted, not... it just doesn't die.
Right. So, finally, last story before you go on. Well, you'll probably listen to this after Christmas, but at least you should be hanging out with family right now. The last story that I want to talk about was HP plugs the security hole within the LaserJet firmware update.
Whew.
Crisis averted. Wow. You remember a few weeks ago we talked about that, where a company came out and said that you could pretty much like blow up houses or burn them down. That wasn't the big deal. The big deal was they could capture all of your personal information off of scans and stuff.
Right.
And HP came out and was, it was way overblown. And for starters, they should have talked to us first. Well, looks like HP was able to scramble and get it done. They have a firmware upgrade. So if your printer is older than 2009, I actually do recommend you do this.
Right.
Mine isn't, so I don't have to do it. But I guess you can go to their website or something, hp.com/support. Select your current drivers based on, the 120,000 choices you'll have. And download the firmware update and go do it, and you will be safe from terrorist attacks.
So I have a terrible question.
Sure.
So do you think it'll be 1% or 3% of the population that will actually get the necessary firmware update?
That seems pretty optimistic.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what's interesting here is it definitely seems like they're covering their butt, but how do you make the changes that are required to actually keep people safe?
Yeah, and unfortunately with these older printers, you can't just push them out to people.
Right.
They got to actively do it themselves. So, If you're listening, protect yourself. Download it. Woo! Crisis averted. It's good. Yay. I was worried there, but they did point out that at no time has anyone ever reported a blown up house. So, wasn't really a big deal to begin with, I guess.
Yeah.
Who knows about the whole, the other side of it, right? The personal information.
Right.
But, there it is.
Woo-hoo!
So, it is currently Christmas Eve. Yeah. We have families.
Yeah.
I saw that you have the game Ticket to Ride. Yeah. Europe edition. We might have to bust that out this
Definitely.
Week. That's a fun game.
We also have Monopoly.
I like that game. It's good. I hate the Game of Life, just for the record.
Yeah, I understand.
I am fundamentally opposed to the lessons they teach. As you know, I know, I realize it's a game, they're not trying to teach you lessons, but I don't like it. What can I say?
That's, yeah, I understand. Rubs you the wrong way. Really quickly, anything going on in your life you want to?
I'm hanging out with you and family, celebrating Christmas, taking it easy. That's it, really.
Cool.
How about awesome. You?
Pretty similar, actually.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't have much. So,
I think next episode, to give you guys a preview, we should talk predictions for 2012. I think that'd be appropriate.
I think
We've kind of held off because I definitely have opinions about iPads. For example, there's no such thing as a 7-inch iPad.
Yeah.
That seems ludicrous. I do think there's such thing as a cheaper iPad too.
Yes.
when there's a new iPad 3, but we will save all of that for next episode. Which means we might lose the whole "you heard it here first" just because other people are going to chime in, but hey, that's all right. It's what we do.
You heard the right prediction here first.
Yes, there you go. That's what we'll be doing next week. I may or may not still be around. It kind of depends on when we end up doing the recording and when I end up going back home. Mm-hmm. But either way, it also kind of depends on how good this sounds. but. No matter what, this was fun. I like doing it. I like doing it live. So everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Boom! And
stop. We just fist bumped.